Political and cultural changes in Egypt are the subject of a discussion on the Western Michigan University campus this week. Osama Madani is a professor of English literature at Menifee University in Egypt. He is currently studying at Western Michigan University on a Fulbright grant. Madani's address is part of the Center for Humanities Changing Climate series and is titled No Country for Old Men, Shifting Cultural Borders in Egypt. Osama Madani, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you very much for having me.
So what do you mean by Egypt being no country for old men?
Well, let's go back a little. Before 2011, before the revolution, the demographic shape of Egypt had developed to the extent, population-wise, that 70% of the country was actually age-wise under the age of 30. Over 50%, that is 50 million, were actually under the age of 25. And that's a lot of young people. Now, with the previous regime, the Mubarak regime, this had continued for 30 years. Mubarak had reached an age where he only trusted his generation. So we had Mubarak, we had the cabinet, we had all his ministers, the prime minister. They were all over the age of 70, 75 even. And they gradually lost touch with the people, especially with the young generation. And they continued to treat them in a patriarchal, condescending manner. And many of these youth felt invisible in their country, and they felt that they did not belong. And they simply nobody listened. And this was one of the main reasons for the revolution, is that this overwhelming young people felt that they were let down, they were left over, and they had to revolt to bring down this corrupt regime of Mubarak. Egypt is an Arabic country. It's a highly patriarchal country, but it had reached the point where they could only see each other, this old generation. They talk to each other. They listen to each other. They take decisions based on their views of life. And they totally forgot this young generation. And this is a young generation that grew up in an age of technology where they were exposed, where they had access to the internet, to Facebook, to Twitter, and they can see how it is with the rest of the world. And so they reached the point of explosion where they had to just go out and get rid of this regime and try and establish a new age for Egypt. So it is no country for old men in the sense that this is a young generation that had to take matters into their own hand. They've been trying to do this since 2011 until now. They've tried over and over again, and the revolution just failed them once and failed them twice and failed them three times. And each time a regime comes after the 2011 revolution, just let these young people down. And they, again and again, they were sidelined in Egyptian politics and in the act of decision-making, that they just revolt over and over again, trying to state the idea, trying to send the message to the old generation that you need not to step down, but to give us a chance to make us part of this evolving new age in which young people are part and parcel of their life's future.
In that sense, is the relatively youthful population of Egypt a blessing? Is it a problem? Could it be some of both?
It's a blessing and it's a problem. It's a blessing in the sense that they are the only hope for Egypt to bypass this devastating period we're living in. They are the ones who, as I said, who are exposed. They are the ones who are knowledgeable. They can take Egypt into another age of true ideals of justice, of liberty, of democracy. They understand the true meanings of these words. But they pose a problem in the sense that corruption has been so ingrained in the fabrics of Egypt that they have nowhere to go. I mean, unemployment is just sky high. Housing is a serious, serious problem. They have very, very serious problems. Egypt is one of the countries in the world that send out its youth everywhere in the world. They immigrate and they try to look for work in the Gulf states, in Europe, here in the States, and they're just getting out in the thousands and in the millions. So it's a blessing, but it is also posing a great deal of problem. The problem is that this old generation is not getting the message that to find solutions, you have to find them innovatively, and you have to find them through this young generation, because they are the ones who are living these problems day in, day out. But they're not getting this chance.
So how did the shift come about culturally? What did these young people do? How did they sort of channel their energies? And what has it meant for Egypt, say, in the 3 years since the revolution?
This is a good question. It started way before the revolution. Before the revolution, Egypt was highly militarized, and it was very difficult to freely speak out your ideas in any form of art. So what they did is in any form politically, that is, I'm sorry. So they resorted to the various forms of art. One important means of this was in the letters, in literature. All publishing houses in Egypt are state controlled. 5 years before the revolution, two or three private publishing houses began to take in the literary productions of these young men and women in their 20s and early 30s. And one of them was Merit Publishing House, and they began to publish the works of these young writers, whose literary productions were highly deconstructive of the traditional cultural heritage of Egypt, in which we are so proud of. We have grown up with the legacy of Egypt being the mother of our lands, being the country that every other country looks up to. And this young generation had realized otherwise, that we are no longer this. And actually everyone is looking down on us. And this is what they did. They deconstructed their heritage intentionally as a wake-up sign to their generation that we are the bottom of the ladder in every aspect of life. So they would use minimalistic language, they would use deconstructive languages, they would go after their heritage, whether it is Pharaonic, whether it is Islamic. And they were very harsh on this. So they were accused of a very serious crime then. And that could lay you in prison for life. And it's called tarnishing the image of Egypt. It's silly, but it's constitutional. So many of them, of course, these publishing houses, most of them were shut down. And many of these writers were actually imprisoned and pardoned afterwards as a sign of good intention on the part of our regime.
But they were pardoned afterwards, but these publishing houses were still out of business?
How it works in Egyptian politics is that, as I said, we were talking earlier, they do it delicately. They do it smoothly. They know how to play the game. They don't put them out of business because they know they have a smoldering generation down there. So they close them and then they open them again and then they give them subsidies. They lure them to take a different direction. Many of them actually go with this, but some, like Merit Publishing Houses, they stick to it. They stick to their message. So the regime never allows a dissenting voice to go out of business, but it's a cat and mouse game.
They're given encouragement to pursue other ventures.
And it often works, unfortunately. This is one. Another was, in the written word, this was before the revolution, 5 years before the revolution, this was vibrant. Media-wise, it's a problem because Egypt is a highly illiterate. The population is high, 50% are illiterate. So the written word is not that problematic in Egypt. What's problematic is the media production. So if you go on YouTube and you post a song, or if you go on YouTube and post a documentary, that poses a problem. And many of these artists did this, but they had to, at one point in their life, leave the country. And most of them came here to the States, like Tamim al-Barghouti, who's stated in Washington, D.C. now. And they have written songs and posted documentaries that were actually very anti-regime. With the toppling of the regime, maybe second, third day on the regime was toppled on the 11th. On the 12th, the facade of Cairo totally changed. Graffiti came out. Song came out. The revolution itself, we call it the 18-day revolution. There were chants and there were songs in Tahrir Square. We call it our Facebook revolution and also the peaceful revolution, because these kids just chanted. I mean, they reclaimed their public space. This was denied them for, since they were born. It has been denied them for 30 years, but I say it has been denied them since 1952, since Nasser came. They reclaimed public space, and art and culture was vibrant. So they sang, they drew graffiti. They used to have these huge projectors in Tahrir Square, and they would air documentaries that were banned before. And they were punished by that. They would be raided at night by security, and they would be arrested, and they would be killed for just chanting and singing and reclaiming this public space. After the revolution, they continued to do that because they discovered that they had made one of the most drastic mistakes in the history of any revolution, is that once the head of the regime was toppled, they thought that the regime had gone. So they went home. They left the square. And this is something they regret until now. They should have stayed there, and they should have at least got rid of 3 layers of this, or 4 layers of this regime. So they continue. They've gained experience with their various forms of art. So they, again, it's turned into a cat and mouse game. They draw graffiti, they sing songs, they get chased away, they come back, they post them on Facebook, they send Twitter messages to each other to occupy a public square for half an hour and do this song, and then run away in the nearby alleys before security attacks them. So strangely, art is vibrant now in Egypt. It's, but it is a temporary maneuver on behalf of the protesters to reclaim their public space and to send messages to the old regime.
Does a vibrant art and literature culture mean good things otherwise, or is it sort of two separate things? You have this vibrant culture, and at the same time, the political situation doesn't seem to get any better.
The political situation, well, it doesn't. Yes, the political situation doesn't get any better. It is cruel, and it's cruel on this young generation particularly, because they are the ones who are not easily convinced. Many of our population now, 50%, 60% even. Unfortunately, those who are highly illiterate and those who benefit directly from the fact that the old regime cronies have to still be in power, they are the ones who have been, okay, they're convinced now that the revolution has achieved its ends and goals, and this is a new start. But this young generation is the one that who are not convinced at all. And yes, they're 40%, they're maybe 35%, but that's a big, big number, and they do pose problems. they feel because they've been crushed and they've been blamed as being the traitors of Egypt now by the majority for not letting the country, between inverted commas, move ahead to its future. They are doing the minimum restraint in their revolutionary maneuvers against the regime. So they resort to art as a wake-up call, as a wake-up sign to not only the young people of Egypt and to the older generation, but to the rest of the world, that this is the most we can do. Otherwise, we will lose our lives. And the regime will be condoned for taking our lives away. So we have to resist, but we need help. And this is the only way we can resist, is to, again and again, claim public space. And these are the public squares of Egypt. Over and over again, they occupy them and they send the message, but then they have to leave quick. And unfortunately, countries like the US, which subsidize Egypt in billions of dollars, do not send a clear message that you need to cater for this young generation, because this is the generation that owns the future of this country, not the 80-year-olds and the 90-year-olds who are taking the decisions now. So yes, it's a good thing, but you cannot separate it from the politics, because that's our Gandhi form of negative resistance, and that's the only way this young generation can do it.
Given what you just spelled out for us there, that all this young generation has is the ability to take over a public square for a short period of time, give us a reason, if you could, to be optimistic about Egypt and where it's heading, perhaps with new leadership, with some changes coming. Give us a reason that we should look at Egypt and think that 5 or 10 years from now, we could be having a very different conversation.
I can only be optimistic. I cannot be otherwise. Because now there is the message being sent out to us that if you don't like this country, leave.
And that message comes from where? From the regime?
Yeah, yes. And it is being spelled out now to everyone. This is the Egypt we want. This is the Egypt we desire. This is the future we are seeking. You are downright traitors. If you don't go down with us, just leave. But again, this is our country. And we refuse to leave. Bad as the situation may seem, and it is bad, but we refuse to leave our country because that's the only thing we have. I can only be optimistic because we've tried over and over again throughout the years the military as a ruling regime. And the people, it seems, again, and this has been a long, long heritage of Egyptian culture, is that if the regime comes from the military, then you feel secure. This is a message that has been ingrained in the fabrics of our culture. But we believe that with the successive presidents who have a military background, one day, this country will realize that this is not how to go about doing it. Now there is the message being sent out, as I talk to you now, that this is our best and only option, is to have a military general. And otherwise, a civilian is inexperienced and is weak. These are the two labels always being put on a civilian president. But we will learn the lesson. But we can only learn it, and that's my belief, only through what this young generation is doing. Because I teach them. I know how they think. I know that they are smart, but they are not given the chance. They are crushed and they are sidelined and they are cornered and they don't speak, but they are patient. And when you give them the chance to speak out and to open their hearts, you will find that these are the true leaders of Egypt, but you need to give them a chance. Nobody does. Nobody listens to them. It's not because of the politics. It's because of the culture. It's always because you're a kid until you reach 50, and then you become a man. It's cultural, but this culture has to change. And by giving these young people a chance, they will change. So I'm optimistic that we will realize one day that the regime is not our only and best option. And I'm optimistic because I know that these young people will not give up. They have no other option other than to continue right to the very end. And it comes and goes. They get repressed, but then they have a breath of fresh air and they get oppressed again. It's, as I said, it's a cat and mouse game. But I'm optimistic that the future can only be for the better, and it can never be for the worse.
Osama Madani, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much for having me.
Osama Madani is a professor of English literature at Menifia University in Egypt. He's currently studying at Western Michigan University on a Fulbright grant. He will speak Thursday night at Western Michigan University's Center for the Humanities.